You're listening to The Point. Now we hear three stories about veterans produced by the American Homefront Project, a public media collaboration that reports on military life and veterans. Some military veterans who fought for the United States are now fighting to keep living in the United States. They're among the thousands of veterans who are not American citizens. They're legal immigrants, and while serving, they're treated just like any other service member. But after they're discharged, immigrant vets who break the law can be deported despite their military service. Dorian Marina reports from Los Angeles.
Mario Martinez tugs a cardboard box into his dining room. He pulls out a paper with a child's drawing of flowers. It's from his granddaughter.
She's 5 now, 5 years old.
Next to the painting is what he's looking for, his discharge papers from the U.S. Army.
Yeah, and this is from Fort Bragg, North Carolina, where I was at. It was part of the 82nd Airborne Division.
The box holds documents from his military life, including his deployment in the late 1980s to Germany, where he was sent with the 3rd Armored Division to guard the Berlin Wall. It was a heady time, he says, and as an immigrant from Mexico, he saw himself as part of a force protecting America's security.
I've served this country honorably in the military. I got an honorable discharge. I would have been willing to die for this country, the only place I call my home.
But more than a decade after he left the Army, he was convicted of assault in a domestic violence case. It happened the night he found the body of his best friend, who had died by suicide. Martinez says he was upset and got into an argument with his girlfriend. He served 4 years in prison and says he regrets what he did.
One mistake shouldn't make the rest of your life. I mean, I paid for what I did. I did my time. I did it quietly and went in, did my time, got out. Isn't that punishment enough?
For U.S. citizens, the prison term would have been the end of it. But Martinez, who is now 54, is facing deportation under a longstanding federal law. It allows the government to deport even legal immigrants who commit crimes, and that includes immigrants who are veterans. Jenny Pasquarella is an attorney with the ACLU.
The fact that that person gave willingly their life to defend this country should be an extraordinary factor that the government considers when seeking a punishment as severe as deportation and, in many cases, permanent separation from their families.
Last year, Pasquarella looked at more than 80 cases of deported veterans. She found that many thought they automatically became citizens through their service. Others applied for naturalization only to have their paperwork lost.
In fact, we had multiple people say that they didn't know that they weren't a U.S. citizen until literally they were being put on that plane to be deported, or they were facing that immigration judge.
Immigration and Customs Enforcement says it does take military service into account. The agency says official policy is to have senior leadership at the local field office sign off before deporting a veteran. But an executive order signed by President Trump in January expands who can be deported. Already, immigrant arrests are up by a third compared to last year. And not everyone agrees that veterans should be protected from deportation. Donnie Youngblood is the sheriff in Kern County, California, and the president of the California Sheriff's Association.
Even under the Obama administration, 3 misdemeanors and you were able to be deported. So I have mixed emotions because I am a veteran, but I certainly empathize with the victim more than anyone.
Youngblood does propose a solution: grant citizenship to immigrants who serve in the military. The Pentagon says it's taking steps in that direction by making it easier for troops to get naturalized. They say that's helped decrease the number of non-citizens in the military from about 35,000 in 2005 to just over 11,000 today. While the changes come too late for vets like Mario Martinez, he says other veterans have earned the right to become Americans.
These people gave up a lot for your freedom. Obviously, some had criminal records, but they're still people, and they serve this country honorably to maintain the standard of life that you currently have.
Martinez's next court date is 2020, and he's trying to rebuild his life. He recently moved into a new home with his son in Southeast LA, but the government could make him a priority for deportation at any time. In Los Angeles, I'm Dorian Marina.
Women are the fastest-growing demographic of homeless veterans, but they tend to be undercounted and underserved. Only a few housing programs for former service members specialize in helping female veterans. In our second story from the American Homefront Project, Rebecca Scheer introduces us to one of them in western Massachusetts.
The federal government estimates that on any given night, 3,000 to 4,000 female veterans are homeless. But that estimate's probably on the low side, says Sarah Skoko, who directs the women's program of the nonprofit group Soldier On.
When people are doing homeless counts, they're going to shelters. They're seeing people on the street. A female veteran is not the person you see on the street holding a sign.
She might be a single mom. She may have experienced sexual trauma. So, says Skoko, these women are holing up in their cars. They're couch surfing. As a result,
the issue of female veteran homelessness is so underlooked, understudied. It's not understood because it's not in your face all the time.
So Soldier On decided to do its part.
Okay.
By building a transitional housing facility just for women.
So welcome to the women's program.
In this bright and airy three-story building on the VA campus in Leeds, Massachusetts, the program houses 16 women and caters to their special needs with things like art and yoga classes, support groups, and job counseling.
A lot of women that come to us have really lost everything. They've lost all sense of hope. And so all of what we do is build them back up.
Skoko says all the residents suffered some sort of trauma before, during, or after they served. 61-year-old Luann Hazelwood, who was in the Army in the 1970s and 80s, says her verbal, physical, and sexual trauma started early in life.
I more or less wanted to join the military as a way of escape.
But she experienced more trauma in the military after she got out, too. When she came to the women's program, she was fleeing her second abusive marriage and was so traumatized she didn't speak. Being only around women made her feel safer.
I can't say I've ever really had a positive relationship with a man. And, you know, I have yet to totally trust being around a man. So for me, it was a way of recouping from all the abuse that I went through.
33-year-old Paige is another resident of the program. The former Air Force technician asked that we not use her last name. She'd struggled with depression and self-esteem issues long before she enlisted. She thought being in the military might help.
I was thinking I was going to get some sort of approval and pat on the back.
Instead, Paige got verbally harassed.
You know, you're called a whore, fat bitch.
And she fell into a culture of drinking.
You party a lot. That's what happens. You work hard, you play hard.
And Paige played especially hard.
I remember going through Walmart after work one day. This is when I was drinking, and I wanted to crawl under a rock and, like, die. Because a lady stopped with her daughter and pointed to me and said, "See, honey, that's a hero. Like, I'm supposed to be here protecting you. If I can't even help myself, what the hell am I doing?"
Paige confided in a therapist. She says he threatened to have her thrown out. In the end, she was allowed to resign with an honorable discharge. After rotating through several co-ed detox programs for veterans, she found the women's program.
Were you still drinking at that point?
Mm-hmm. I stopped, I think, like the day or day before that I came in here. And I haven't had a drink since.
By 2020, the number of female veterans is expected to reach 2.2 million. So there's an intense need for more gender-specific services, says Director Sarah Skoko.
There are women that have served the hell out of our country, and they're not being recognized, and they need to be. They need to be treated, not the same way as males, but they need to be treated, period.
But demand for women-only services vastly exceeds supply. For these 16 rooms in Massachusetts, the women's program often has a waiting list and has received referrals and applications from as far away as Hawaii. I'm Rebecca Shear in Leeds, Massachusetts.
When a former service member needs a service dog to help with a visual, hearing, or mobility issue, the Department of Veterans Affairs helps pay for it. But that's not the case for veterans who use service dogs to help them cope with post-traumatic stress disorder. There's controversy over whether dogs can help PTSD patients and whether the government should pay for them. In our final story from the American Homefront Project, Paige Flagler reports from Long Island, New York.
Russell Kaiser lives in a housing complex for veterans in Ronkonkoma, New York, with his service dog, Artemis.
There she is.
She looks kind of like a German Shepherd, but sleeker, and has amber-colored eyes that follow Kaiser as he walks around the room.
Sit.
Kaiser developed post-traumatic stress disorder after serving in the Army in Kosovo.
At the worst, I would only sleep maybe 2 or 3 hours a night. When I did sleep, the dreams were like pure terror. It was like closing my eyes and going into a horror movie.
He was willing to try pretty much anything to make his PTSD go away, which was when he heard about a program called Paws of War. They take dogs from shelters and then train them to be service animals for veterans across the country. If Artemis senses that Kaiser is on edge, she'll get behind him and then block him from people who might startle him.
For the anxiety level, she starts biting my hand, like a nibble. That's how she does it. And the nightmare, she's waking, licks my face. And also she, when she jumps up and grabs me, that's the cue to remove myself from a place because it's, I'm being overwhelmed.
Having a service dog or even a companion animal is one tool in their recovery from their wounds of war.
That's Dory Schofield, one of the founders of Paws of War. Her involvement doesn't end when a dog goes home with a veteran.
I help them if they need yearly vaccines. We give them at-cost heartworm preventative. So anything else that I can do above and beyond to help defray costs for them will do.
Schofield says that she doesn't mind helping the veterans, but those charges are hard to stomach when looked at in context. When she trains dogs for veterans with visual, hearing, or mobility disorders, the Department of Veterans Affairs pays for veterinary care, but the VA doesn't foot the bill for veterans with service dogs for PTSD, and that just doesn't add up to Schofield.
It's just as debilitating and crippling as any other physical disability. You just don't see it. We hope that in the future, not too distant future, that the VA will provide these services.
But the VA is waiting on hard evidence that the dogs really help veterans cope with PTSD. Michael Fallon is the VA's chief veterinary medicine doctor.
I would say there are a lot of heartwarming stories that suggest that service dogs might help people with PTSD, but the scientific basis for that claim is lacking.
The VA started a study back in 2011, but had trouble with ill-trained dogs. Some of them even bit children, so that study was called off.
The VA is primarily based upon evidence-based medicine, and we certainly would want people to utilize a therapy that has proven value.
Artemisin.
For Russell Kaiser, Artemis has already proven that.
How it works, I don't know. I don't care. I don't try to figure it out. You know, like, I know antibiotics work, too. I don't need to go through the chemical breakdown of it, you know? Like, it just works.
A new study is underway. The VA is now recruiting veterans to participate, but it isn't expected to be finished before 2019. So, at least until then, the government has no plans to cover veterinary care for PTSD service dogs. I'm Paige Flager in Ronkonkoma, New York.
These stories were produced by the American Homefront Project, a public media collaboration that reports on American military life and veterans. Funding comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and the Bob Woodruff Foundation. Coming up after a break, Battle Lines, the poetry and music of World War I and II, with pianist Jacqueline Schwab and historian Greg Williams.